I'm Sam Post, and welcome to The Music Post. Each episode, of course, we listen to a new piece of music, dig into it, find out what makes it great. And today we'll also be digging into a few different recordings of our piece for the day, a Chopin Nocturne for piano. We'll hear how different they are, including, I'll argue, in overall quality, as I ever so gently push you in the direction of one or two of them. And along the way, I'll also tell you about some of the basic problems that a piece like this presents to us pianists, and how our performers today have chosen to solve these problems, or, in many cases, attempted to solve them. It's going to be a good show. Stay with me. So some people think that if you're getting to know a piece like this, it doesn't really matter what pianist you listen to, that after a certain level of fame or degree of training, they're all, if not interchangeable, then they're at least all good enough in some sense. I hope to convince you that this is really not true at all. Just as we heard last week for opera singers, not true for pianists, not true really for any category of musician. Today we'll hear short snippets from four different pianists before we hear the piece all the way through from a fifth. And these pianists have different levels of prestige, different degrees of fame, but I'll tell you their names and I'll tell you about their professional reputations at the end. That way you can see how well your own judgments line up with those professional reputations. Some of them I really love, and others not so much. Partly that has to do with variation in taste. Not everyone I don't like is terrible, obviously, but I do hold out hope that if we could all listen without prior influence, without bias, we could agree to some extent at least on what's good and what's not so good. Maybe I'm just a dreamer, though. The piece I have nothing but love for, and hopefully at least I can convince you to share those feelings by the end of this episode if you don't share them already. The Chopin Nocturne, Opus 48, Number 1, in C minor. That was the opening phrase of the piece from pianist number one. You can hear it's like a funeral procession with these deep octaves in the bass alternating with chords in the left hand this way, and so forth. And the right hand melody comes on these offbeats, syncopations at the beginning, suggesting to me this crying out in pain, suffering, but very muted and suppressed at the same time. And what I love so much about pianist number one's playing is his or her ability to find these different levels of soft sound. And people say this is what distinguished Chopin's own playing back in the 1800s from his contemporaries. You know, when you look at a piece of music like this, typically you find suggestions from the composer to play softly, piano, or very softly, pianissimo. But it takes many finer categorizations, gradations, to really bring this music to life, and a lot of control as well. And pianist number one does that especially well. Let's hear the next phrase now, and you'll hear this same melody very close to it at the beginning, but with very different harmonies, which seem a little bit uplifting at first, then we're pulled back into this darkness. Such an ethereal, otherworldly sound. Each note sounds like this perfect little pearl, and I get the feeling sometimes that this pianist has the ability to manipulate the sound of individual notes in a way that I and other pianists just don't have. But that's just an illusion, because there's not that much that you can control on the piano aside from the volume of individual tones. So it's just an effect of aggregating a stunning degree of control over all the notes that he's playing that gives it this atmospheric effect. It's that, I should say, and some amazing pedaling, which is a topic maybe for another time. Now, one thing I don't love, at least in this particular excerpt, is some effects of timing. I don't quite get this rhythmic sense of this plodding march from this pianist. And obviously the speed at which you play this piece is a major decision, as well as various aspects of expressive timing, which in Chopin's music we typically call rubato. So now we'll hear the next phrase from another pianist who, while I don't think has quite the magical sound effect that pianist number one has, gives, even while taking time using lots of rubato, gives a stronger sense of this march. Right at the end there, if you didn't notice, you heard that same opening melodic idea come back again with different harmonies. And what you heard from pianist number two is actually very unusual, because these harmonies are much richer. We have these suspended sevenths on each chord that, for me and for most pianists, drive it forward to the climax of this opening section. Tortuous melody, lots of changes of direction. And that's the end of the first of the three main sections of this piece. The second one starts out very differently. Let's hear from pianist number three. So for me, pianist number three is missing the point. This section should be extremely calm, solemn, dignified. Very simple harmonies, but beautiful. Except for this one, which is a little bit unexpected. We could have had a simple dominant chord, but instead, this note gives a little extra zest. The next phrase repeats this idea that we had before in the first phrase, an octave higher, and with these wonderful rolled chords like a harp in the left hand. next phrase, we start building the tension ever so slightly. More complex, rich harmonies. But then it dissipates. And we come to the calmest moment of all. And one more time we're going to hear, well, not one more time I should say, but again we hear this idea that opened the section. Now for the first time, off in the distance, a more spooky, foreboding element. But close by, it's like nothing's going wrong. Closer. The next phrase combines then what we heard in a previous one, this, in the foreground, again with this brewing storm in the background with the octaves. It's getting closer and closer. Not here yet, but getting closer. Finally, we come to this climax. We hear one more time this melodic fragment that opened this section very calmly. Now a very different character, very triumphant. The section ends triumphantly on this positive note before things take a turn for the worse. Now I want to play you going back to this very calm spot, first now from pianist number 4, and then going back and comparing with pianist number 1. You'll hear quite a difference in how they build up to this climax, both in terms of pacing and in terms of dynamic, how quickly they get louder. Going back, pianist number 1. Exciting there at the end from pianist number 1, and pianist number 4 not doing it for me, which brings up another issue. How closely are we obligated as performers to follow the markings that composers put in the score? Because if you take out the score and look at this piece, pianist number 4 has followed these markings to a T in this section. There's no indication to speed up, and it's basically just marked loud from way back in this spot, with no indication to get louder as we approach the climax. But of course, I think that really misses the point, because our ultimate goal should be to create music that speaks to us and is meaningful and amazing. And Pianist Number One has certainly done a better job of that for me. And I assume if Chopin were still alive, he would agree. I don't think that he wrote this down 100 some odd years ago with the intention of everyone playing it exactly the same for the rest of eternity. I think he would have been thrilled to know that some artist came up with some concept that maybe is even better than what he thought of at the time. Or at least he would have accepted this difference. On to the last section now, which is a repeat of the first section in terms of the melody and the harmonies, but with a very different accompaniment, a very different feeling. Instead of this funeral march, we have these quick-moving triplet accompaniment chords in both hands. Let's hear each of our four pianists play this opening phrase to the last section. Major difficulty in this last section is nurturing this excitement and anxiety from this accompaniment figure, these triplet chords. 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2. But still keeping them under control to such an extent that the melody can still be heard very clearly. We call this problem voicing, the problem of bringing out some notes versus others. And remember when I said earlier how Pianist Number One has this amazing control over different levels of softness, and that becomes even more important in a section like this where you're controlling different degrees of softness even in at the same time in the same chord. So for instance, if we play all the notes more or less equal volume, what we get is a little overbearing and totally unsatisfying. Not so great. And furthermore, I think Pianist Number One does the best in this section at achieving this anxiety and excitement with control. Pianist Number Two has clearly made a decision not to make this terribly exciting, and that's up to him. I don't find it to be the best, but it's a very beautiful playing nevertheless. Pianist Number Three misses the mark, and part of the reason, you know, I can't hear his left hand accompaniment chords at all, hardly, and it seems that he has overcompensated in perhaps in trying to bring out the melody by making these chords totally inaudible. And likewise, I don't find Pianist Number Four's playing, again, to be exciting. This section should be fiery. Your heart should be racing. Now, another thing that contributes to that is where we have groups of four in the melody versus groups of three at the same time in the accompaniment chords, places like this. So again, in the left hand, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. But in the right hand, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4. So together. And there's another place later on where we get even more unequal groups. We get seven in the melody versus three in the chords and the accompaniment. forces the pianist to be very expressive and take time. Here. If done well, it can be a really stunning effect when played faster up to tempo. And the last thing to say about this last section, at the moment where we expect the end, the final cadence, corresponding to the moment in the first section where it came to a close, we get a very shocking moment. So instead of what we expect, that would have made sense. Instead, we get this very strange harmony which extends things. But much more tragic when you hear it all the way through, which we will do now from pianist number 5. Thank you. hope you enjoyed that. And like I said, I hope I've helped you fall in love with this piece because it is a great one. And now for the big reveal. You may have recognized a bit of pianist number 5's playing. That was me in not a live performance, but a single take recording. Definitely not the way I would play that piece if I were to play it again today. Not my favorite playing, certainly not of the caliber of pianist number 1 or 2. But at the same time, I have to say, not bad. Pianist number 1 was a Czech pianist named Ivan Moravec, or Moravec, I'm not even sure how it's pronounced. He had a successful career, but never quite achieved the heights of fame that I think he deserved, at least not in conservatory circles. Definitely not the type of fame accorded to pianist number 2, Artur Rubinstein, considered one of the absolute great pianists of the 20th century, especially for Chopin. Pianist number 3 was the youngest winner of the International Chopin Competition some years back, and has since been a huge success, a huge splash. His name is Yundi Lee, and, well, I'm not a huge fan, at least not of his C minor nocturne. And pianist number 4, another musician, pianist conductor of the highest regard, Daniel Barenboim. There are, of course, hundreds of pianists I could have included today but didn't. I didn't include any women, which I feel a little bad about, especially because my favorite living pianist is a woman. Her name is Gabriela Montero, and I'm sure I will include her soon enough. She has a live performance of this nocturne on YouTube, which I'm also not a huge fan of, although I think it's very good. She is a genius in so many other ways. I'll try not to go on and on about her right now. I'll put links to all these performances, recordings, on the Music Post website, www.samueljpost.com/podcast, and you can let me know if you think you know a better one. I would be dying to hear it. You can reach me at samueljpost@gmail.com or themusicpostpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, and I hope you'll join me next time.